Okay, thanks, Gerald. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colcomino, 12th floor of the Capitol. Today it is Thursday, June 12th, approximately 8:30, meeting for a work session on case number PU 14-105, Sunflower Wind Project LLC. We had the hearing on this a while back. We've all had a chance to, we have a draft order to go through if we like. I guess before we get to that, I wanted to see if my colleagues had any particular issues they wanted to talk about on this before we went into the draft. I didn't really have anything that jumped out at me. All the questions that I had got answered, and so that's kind of where I'm at, I guess. So, Randy, do you have any particular questions?
I have some questions on the draft order, but I don't have any opening comments.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have opening comments either.
Okay. Jerry, maybe you just want to start walking us through?
Sure. And so this is the proposed order, and I went through it with some edits that are in the changes track.
So first page, pretty much the usual stuff. And preliminary statement continues into the second page, and we get to the findings of fact. The first couple of things are pretty routine. You want me to read them? Or?
All right.
Here. Morning. Apologize for being late.
So I'll start with four and then say that the project consists of up to 59 wind generators.
Jerry, why do we, just in a general comment, why do we get so specific about the actual number of turbines?
You know,
because we have number of turbines and we have alternate locations. And
yeah, we say where the locations are on them. And I guess it kind of falls from that. We say how many of them there are. You know, sometimes it puts us in a spot if they've changed something in their layout or something along the lines, and it says so many turbines in the order and everything, then we have to go back and change the order.
Exactly.
And so it does make it kind of a hassle for us and for everybody with it in there.
Although I would say they laid out a plan and an alternate plan, and this is worded in a way that allows either one to the maximum number. If they wanted to cut a few back, you know, they could. It would just be if they're going to grow the project beyond either of their proposals, that it would require a change in this order, I think so.
It sets an upper limit, like Randy says, too.
It also shows the locations of the turbines, right? So
yeah.
If they want to pick a different location, they need a
and we usually give alter their order. Alternate locations.
Right, but anything outside of that, they'd have to come back.
And, yeah, if they want to move locations significantly, it has to come back, too. You know, we have allowed them to move them a little bit as they run into trouble and stuff with different things going on and when their construction is, by me sending around the little memo and letting you guys know what they're moving.
When they select their locations, do they do more specific environmental and cultural studies of that specific turbine location?
Yeah.
So that would be appropriate that they tell us what they found in the new locations.
Yeah, and if they are moving them in locations that weren't surveyed before, they'll survey those new locations too.
Thanks, Jerry. I just wanted to tee it up a little bit for the discussion because I always thought it was interesting that if someone really got pushed the footprint law, once we approved a project area, couldn't they put more turbines in the middle of it?
You know,
they really pushed it.
I think it's a possibility with the footprint law, but the way we've worded the orders and so forth, they'd have to follow the order.
Okay. That's good, Jerry. I just want to walk through it a little bit.
Yeah, the footprint law is kind of weird.
Because I thought of that yesterday when we did that notice for the hearing down south. But okay, that's good, Jerry. Thanks.
Okay. Under five, both Morton County and Stark County have issued their conditional use permits for the project. Six, we get into the project description.
Did you add a question on that, too? This is a little bit off topic, but do townships have to issue anything? Ryan might know this, too, from your past. Or do townships vary?
The township would vary depending on whether or not there's zoning ordinances within those townships.
Yeah, if you remember in Burley County, we had Croft Township or some others up there for those Burley Wind projects.
Right, that's what I was thinking about.
And they had some stuff that they passed on their own for ordinances, and then they have to follow that in those townships. And if I remember right, there was a big to-dos over that, including FPL moving their turbines out of their township.
But do we have to put something in there that we've at least thought about the townships, or...?
Well, since there wasn't anything raised anywhere, I am assuming there is no conditional use permits required and we don't need to put anything in there.
And I don't think the county would be issuing one if there was the township had jurisdiction.
Okay. You know, the company signs off on that certificate that they've got all their permits and all that. That implies that they've done that.
Right.
Okay.
So in the description areas... it's all pretty standard language, except it's of note that they propose two different turbine types. They've given us two different layouts, one for the Vistas, there would be up to 55 Vistas V110 turbines, or up to 59 General Electric 1.8587 turbines. The thing here is that they're going to select those later, and they did the project layout for both.
So then do we have to change the order at all once they decide, so we don't find ourselves where we're at with the Thunder Spirit one?
With the Thunder Spirit one, they're in there changing
the
locations significantly.
Okay, so we've already had these locations have already been walked through with the studies and the hearings.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, okay.
And so in this one, we're setting it up so that they can just let us know which of those two turbines and which site plan they're going to use.
Okay.
So I'm on page four, if we're good with three.
Jerry, I have a question on the copy that you sent me yesterday. On page three, there was a 14 and 15 that were left blank. Is that not the case on these, on the one that you're looking at?
Oh. We'll have to renumber. I think this is page four. I took 14 and 15 out. 14 says Sunflower has entered into a power purchase agreement with Basin Electric. And the only reason I took them out is I think that we've not said that in the past.
Right. Well, on 15, we mention it elsewhere that the approvals are in.
I got rid of 15 and changed the language in whatever it was, 5.
But I'm fine with 15 going away. But on 14, I think it's an important part of the project. They put it in their proposal, and I think it ought to be in here.
I have no problem with putting those in if commissioners want to.
See, that's where I think we'll come down differently, though, because we've had a lot of discussion over this over the years that we don't. It doesn't matter to us who they sell the power to, and oftentimes they don't put it in there. So I don't know. What if they decide to change? And
it's not a factor. And where the turbines are going and what the, where you're in the siting of the case.
They submitted it. It's on the record.
As I said, I haven't got any problem leaving it in. It's up to the commission. We've taken them out before because they're not a factor. But
I guess I was thinking, this is previous discussion, that if we put it in there in an order, that we approve the order, that they're selling it to Xcel Energy, and we find ourselves down the road in an ADP with Xcel Energy or a rate case with Xcel Energy, there's some implied, whether it's legally backed or not, that we knew that the Xcel was buying the power. We approved the order selling it to Xcel, even though it's never come back to us in a rate case. And so it puts, in my opinion, it can put you in a box. If you prove something in a wind farm development that it says who it's going to sell to an investor-owned. We don't regulate basins, so it's a different scenario. But that was, if I remember right, the discussion that we had jumping forward three different steps.
I think it goes to the general idea that you usually don't want to say more than you need to on anything. Just for a matter of principles in this business. But,
because we may approve a wind farm. And they think they're going to sell it to Xcel Energy, and we may disallow it in the rate case or in an ADP. And so it just puts you in this really really interesting box.
But in this case, we don't regulate basin anyways, so I don't see that we're boxing ourselves in any way with it. It's on the record.
Why do you want it in there, though, Randy? It's not part of the criteria. I mean, it's not part of our decision whether they could be constructing this without a power purchase agreement secured, and it wouldn't change our review.
We talk all the time as far as the whole overall picture of the things this commission does about getting more power generation and the need for more power generation, especially in Western North Dakota and in specifically Basin Electric and MDU's service areas. And so I think this is a piece of that puzzle. And so I just thought that it's a good thing to have in there.
I'm agree with you. I'm glad they have a power purchase agreement, and I think it does work to serve some of that need. But from keeping the orders clean, I can see the logic in not having it in there.
With the amount of demand, the amount of need for power that we have, I would find myself less enthusiastic about this project if I thought that we were just going to tie up transmission lines, capacity, and that sort of thing, and that this was being sent to heaven knows where, as opposed to whether it is in fact going to be part of the puzzle of filling the needs for power in Western North Dakota.
Well, we can't use the fact of them that they have a power purchase agreement or they don't have one as a factor in deciding a case. Even though that's what you said you'd want to do, it's not a decision factor.
Right, because I don't think Thunder Spirit, there wasn't a PPA in place when that was approved.
There's a lot of them that there's not PPAs in place. Well, I would say this, Randy, if this is something that would cause you to vote against the order, I would think it may be something we should talk about more, but it's more of just a nice to have, or this is a key factor. I guess I'd look at it different.
Let's come back to it, because regarding what Ryan just said, aren't we reviewing Thunder Spirit because their power purchase agreement changed?
No, we're reviewing it because the locations of the turbines changed.
Yeah.
And why did they change? Because their power purchase agreement changed. It's a big part of the equation.
We don't want to get into that case, but I don't think it's – well, it's not my understanding was that there's other factors of why it's changed, and that'll
come up. But we're reviewing it from an environmental and cultural standpoint, citing the change of the locations.
If Thunder Spirit had just changed that power purchase agreement and built less turbines, they wouldn't have needed to come in. But since they were building them in different places than they said.
Those nine new locations, mm-hmm. like we noticed.
Yeah, is what it came down to. But so did I hear we want to just come back to this one?
Sure.
I think so. The renumbering part of it you need to add anyway, because I think we all agree that 15 can go.
Yeah.
Yeah. If, you know, I guess in my thought is that it's not really a big deal if it's in or out.
Just from a consistency standpoint, though, I mean, if we're going to put it in, then we should regularly put it in.
Yep.
And if we're not, I mean, I think it just we'd be more consistent with past orders on wind farms if we don't have it in there.
Right, which is why I took it out, because we had put them in and taken them out before. That was it for changes I made on those pages.
I had a question on 16, Jerry. I've never seen that before, or I can't remember reading it, about where the contract would retain. To me,
it is something that has been in previous orders.
It is, okay.
It's pretty much true in all of them.
But the big thing is we're saying that they're committing to use local contractors. That's what we're trying to get in the record.
What it's saying is that the EPC contractor will use locals, but he doesn't necessarily be local. He'll be whoever is bid and most qualified to build this thing. But what they're saying is that they have a contractor that's building it. They're not building it themselves.
Okay.
So that's page 4. We get into the siting criteria. That's a pretty standard paragraph there in 19. And 20 is prime farmland. And that's pretty much a finding in all of these. It's just we have to find that it's a negligible impact. Otherwise, it's an exclusion area.
You're going to go back and fine-tune some of these changes, right, Jerry? There's a few wordings missing, like prime farmland avoided. Just, you know, there's some verbs, linking verbs and stuff, and some of the changes missing. I assume you'll go back and double-check that.
I didn't intend for them to be any, but I'll look.
Yeah, there's a couple. I've noticed a few. Nothing real major, but it won't read correctly if they aren't added, so.
Can you tell me what you're looking at?
To the extent practicable, prime farmland will be avoided. You took it all out.
No, I changed that to has been avoided.
But it's crossed out. Well, a mine, it's crossed out, so.
Okay, mine, I says has been avoided, period.
Sure. Julie's is just slightly different than mine. I'm seeing what she's seeing on hers, but mine is like yours.
Mine, okay. The has
mine's
been
like Jerry's, too.
Okay.
Okay.
And my intent with that change was that we've got the final project design here, and it's been avoided, not that it's going to be developed later.
So then, quick jump back to page, to number 5.
Sure.
Maybe mine is just not showing up correctly on the spell tracker or changer. Both Morton County and Stark County, do you have issued there? Because I don't have issued on my conditional use permit.
I said both Morton County and Stark County have issued conditional use permits for the project.
I'll just look at after Brian's. Okay.
I thought I only sent out just the version last night.
Yeah, this Esther printed this for me, but it's not tracked. The changes aren't tracking correctly. Oh. So.
Okay.
Your additions are X'd out on mine, so it's all right. I'll just look at Brian's if I have a question.
And so, okay, we finished five with getting into the cultural resource discussions.
I had a quick question on number 20 about the coal reserves.
Mm-hmm.
How do we define that again, economically recoverable?
We don't really have a solid design for that, but economically recoverable means that there's enough coal there to mine it.
Right, but I don't remember that discussion in the hearing, this hearing, but I remember it in some of the other hearings. And they had actually, they had maps of where the coal reserves were as it laid out to the turbine locations.
And I don't recall in this case if we had a map or anything showing that. They didn't find any. My guess is that they brought this language from previous orders they were using.
And I don't have a problem with this, but it does bring an interesting point, especially in light of Julie's report yesterday from her trip up to Falkirk. What was economically recoverable, the 12% of the coal 70 years ago, and now we're in there economically recovering much more of it, and not hundreds of years, but just 70.
If I remember the discussion before, the reason we put it in there was we wanted some safeguards in there that if there ever was to be coal mined, and that it would make a difference to how the bases were removed of the turbines. And then I can't remember exactly how that played out.
I've got the application here where they talk about it.
Okay.
And there's one paragraph, no economic coal deposits were identified. There's one economic coal deposit identified 1 mile southwest of the project area. This deposit has not been mined and does not represent an active mining area. No active or previously active gravel pits are located within the project area. There were some located within 3 miles. One mine shaft was identified approximately 0.75 miles west of the project. Investigations of public maps and local geology did not identify any fossil collection sites in the immediate vicinity of the project area. So it sounds like there might be some mining nearby, but not within the project area.
Perfect. Good catch, Jim. I'm happy, Jerry.
Okay. Okay, so we do the cultural resources on the top of page 6. And we're still waiting for SHPO's concurrence. And I think they're still doing some more studies in this area here. Either way, they're going to have to file a concurrence letter from SHPO.
As well as the federal nexus or the interconnection, too, right?
Yeah. And we do have the draft EIS provided in that, or a link to it.
The same kind of finding, they have to have the SHPO letter, they have to have the thing for the...
Okay. Yeah.
So tell me what the federal involvement or approval is in this, and who is the... WAPA is the... regulating agency?
Western is doing it, and the study or the draft EIS is on their website. Big document, 200 and some pages.
But the nexus exists because they have to interconnect to that transmission mm-hmm. line.
So do they give a finding of no significant impact or whatever their final...
Yeah.
They have to. That's their final.
Yeah, whether the scope is big or small, they have to come back with either EA or EIS, depending upon the...
So even if
the potential harm or mitigation, is a better word.
And I think this was an EIS, but I'd have to look again to remember. But that process is in place. It's in the comment period.
It's an EA.
EA? Yep. Okay.
And that's one of our final criteria that they have to file that. Okay.
They have to file the FONSI.
Mm-hmm. Now, we don't say prior to construction they have to file that. Is that just goes without saying?
They can't begin until they get it.
Okay.
Where are you reading?
Well, I jumped ahead just because I was looking at that language. And it's the fifth criteria under order. Fourth, sorry.
We could add prior to any construction on there. I mean, I don't think that hurts anything.
I was looking to add it. Where?
Number four?
Four, yeah. Sunflower file with the commission.
Instead of when received prior to any construction.
I will open that sentence with prior to construction.
Okay.
Okay, so we were on page 6, and the wetland and wildlife stuff is on that page. And then we get into page 7, and we get noise and shadow flicker.
Let's see.
Well, I have a question on that. Kind of in the middle of number 38 paragraph.
Okay.
The sentence that starts with "this regulation establishes that sound levels."
Yeah.
I liked the way it was worded before. And I'm wondering what the reasoning for changing this is.
That sound levels within buildings cannot exceed. Oh, it's defined as an avoidance area, and so by definition, avoidance area means that you have to avoid it unless there's no reasonable alternative.
Well,
and so if there's a reasonable alternative, the word cannot isn't really correct.
Well, this references the administrative code, and right before I came over here, I hit print, and then it didn't print, so I don't have it in front of me. However,
Jerry got it.
Okay. Well, this isn't a quote, but this is generally what it says, that it must not be in an area where noise levels will exceed 50 decibels. And so now our order kind of waters that down that, well, you just try and avoid it. But.
Well, because it's an avoidance area, the definition of an avoidance area is that you can't put it there unless there's no reasonable alternative. So if they wanted to put one in that place, they'd have to show that they didn't have a reasonable alternative to put it somewhere else. That's just the legal definition. Avoidance areas for when conversion facilities. Otherwise, if it was cannot, they would have it would be an exclusion area. And I was wondering whose criteria I was stealing off the printer.
D- to clarify a little better for me, the 50 dBA, where is that coming from?
It was...
But that's not in our rules or codes or anything.
It's in the rules now. And it was just something that got made up by the Rules Committee, really. There's a number in that neighborhood that's been floating around in different cases for different reasons, and we were using the 46 point something dBA at one point, and we decided to codify it at 50 and then make it at 100 feet from the residence.
Well, and I don't disagree with anything Randy's just said, but it's just, I really think you might want to just kind of walk through some of this. What if somebody decides to build something in the middle of this, a gas station, or whatever, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of noise coming out of there, and then the landowner comes back and says, I mean, how do you say from that source is what I'm trying to get to? Noise can be accumulated from many different places, so you could be taking a noise measurement and at that house 10 years from now, and the wind turbine was always fine, but somebody built something else in there, and then they'd say, well, this is from the wind farm, but it wouldn't be from the wind farm. We've had a lot of discussion about how to pinpoint where the noise comes from. And it just, the whole noise thing, I don't think is...
And it's also not a concrete thing either.
Exactly.
I think of it as we do studies, and we don't put it where we expect the noise level to be at a certain level. But, you know, if it ends up being at that level... that's just too bad.
What, Randy? What were you referencing? The must language. Where did that come from?
From the administrative code. It's 69.06.08.01.4. And now your point, Brian, about something else could get added in or be causing noise. That's regardless how we word this. That's a reality,
right?
Because we have noise addressed in mm-hmm. in code in the first place. But as to Jerry's point, and I'm curious what Ryan thinks of this, I'm looking at number 3 in the administrative code, and that's avoidance areas. And it goes on, there's A through F in there, and those are worded, as Jerry says, if they can't be avoided. And then number 4, a whole different group, well, a group of one, I guess, is additional avoidance areas for wind energy conversion facilities. And there is nothing about if it can't be avoided. It says that the facility site must not include a geographic area where, due to operation of the facility, the sound levels within 100 feet of an inhabited residence or a community building will exceed 50 decibels. So I think our wording was right the way we had it before this change.
If you look up at the beginning of that, it says avoidance areas. The following areas must be avoided unless the applicant shows there's no reasonable alternative.
It's a different section, Jerry.
No, it's under that section.
Not the noise one. The noise one's under a different one.
It's under 4?
Yeah, the noise one is okay. Specifically... provision 4 specifically for noise, and the language just say must not, but then the last sentence of that provision is also it may be waived in writing by the owner. But I think the proposed order from Sunflower said cannot. Jerry's order said avoid exceeding. I'm wondering if we could reconcile it by just taking the regulatory language and put must not.
Well,
must not exceed 50 decibels, which
I'm
is
fine with that.
Frankly,
or Sunflower's proposal.
Yeah, frankly, I was on the team drafting these orders, and it was made in an avoidance area. It was specifically decided where there would be an avoidance area or an exclusion area, and it was made in an avoidance area. So that was the intent.
69.06.08.01. Okay.
Otherwise, it would have been an exclusion area.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at the administrative code, and you referenced it.
Say what you just said again, Jerry, for the noise.
If it was meant to be an exclusion area, they would have called it an exclusion. We would have called it an exclusion area rather than an additional avoidance area.
And then the language
it says additional mandatory. Avoidance area. Right. Avoidance area is defined in 3.
You're viewing that differently, Randy?
Much differently. Number three, the avoidance areas are laid out in there, and that's clear. And then for this specific thing, dealing with the wind conversion facilities, it's a whole separate section, additional avoidance areas. Yeah, so and I'm sure that nobody was worried about an extra sentence. If they wanted it worded the same way, they would have had it the same way. It specifically was worded that it must not, as opposed to the exceptions that are in the previous section.
I would go back to and I don't know, I'm not going to get in the middle of the different interpretation, but I know the intent was, didn't want to get tied into a set number because there is no set number for noise.
Yeah.
And that's still my biggest problem with I don't like
putting. That was another reason why it was made an avoidance area.
Well, I don't like putting any numbers in for noise because there's no fixed standard that ties back to anything. And I know that we've gone down this, and I've always not been the majority in this viewpoint. And but so we start putting numbers out there that aren't tied back to any standard.
And so our solution to it was
flexibility that you're talking
to use
about.
To make it an avoidance area instead of an exclusion area, and to make it the 50 dB at 100 feet. But if you look at, there's a definition for exclusion areas, and that says cannot be put there, period. We cannot, even if they show no reasonable alternative, it can't go there.
Yeah, subpart 1 of 6908 or 6906. 08, the exclusion areas, it comes back to that mandatory language. I think this is probably where we're getting hung up. The exclusion, the must not, cannot, is a exclusionary statement, whereas this avoid exceeding is more of a, it's softer, as you mentioned. It's more of an avoidance. The interesting thing is that provision of the law that we're talking of, the rules that we're talking about here, uses the mandatory language must not. There's an exception if it can be waived in writing. Whereas what Jerry's alluding to is the avoidance area uses the phrase may not be approved. I'm wondering, Commissioner, if we said within 100 feet of inhabited residences or community buildings may not exceed 50 decibels, would you feel comfortable with that? Or do you want that mandatory? I mean, we'd be lifting it straight from the law, or from the rule, so I could go either way on that.
You know, if you say cannot, well, they haven't shown any reasonable alternatives, so it's probably still a true statement.
Well, is it under, it says, like Randy says, must not include an area. And then it says the sound level avoidance area criteria may be waived in writing by the owner of the occupied residence or the community building. So is that the exception?
That would be the exception. Yeah.
And the only exception?
Yes.
Well,
so then,
technically, if they came and showed us that there was no reasonable alternative but to put that thing there, you could put it there. Because it's an avoidance area. I can't imagine a situation where that would be true.
There's no way that'd be true in a wind farm, in my opinion.
No, but yeah,
they can always move one.
Yeah,
turbine.
I can't imagine where that would be true. But I mean, if you look at how the law is designed, that's the definition of avoidance area.
But by the way, we're writing our order. If we make this change, we're saying you don't even have to try that hard. You avoided it. You looked at some other alternative, but you wanted this one, and so you left it. I just think it's written into a separate section, and it's very clear. I don't know how we
Plus, the company drafted this, right? So the company obviously viewed it as a cannot.
And I don't have a problem with putting it back to cannot. I just was hoping everybody would understand that it's an avoidance area and know the difference.
Well, this is where if you go to cannot, Ryan comes in, puts a gas station there, fires up a generator, and all of a sudden the noise from the combined noise is now 50.5. Mm-hmm. Somebody can come back and say, you've now violated your order on the wind farm because the noise, and no matter where it comes from, you walk yourself in this box once again. And that's why the flexibility, I think the intent was to have that flexibility in there. I'm okay with if you guys want to go down that, but I think we've got to go back and adjust these rules on the noise is what I really think, because we've already got enough grayness in there. And there's never been a standard for noise.
It says here, due to operation of the facility, the sound levels within 100 feet. So they'd have to find a way in the sound study to do that, to determine that it was the wind farm that created the sound, not the gas station with the generator.
We all know how much of an exact science measuring sound is.
And, even if something does turn out to be a little noisier than you thought afterwards, what are you going to do?
I
think you'll make efforts to try and mitigate the noise.
Right.
Put some trees or something up in there. And, they'll do that anyway. But
well, and ultimately the residents, the person living there, can sign the waiver and it's fine. I mean, according to our rules, that's what we say is the out or the exclusion from the avoidance area.
Why don't you tweak it, Jared, so Randy, you look at that paragraph real close and you're comfortable with it, and let's put that in the draft.
I do agree with Randy. It's pretty clear in the rules that the facility must not include, so.
As long as you're planning on voting for it, if you're going to put it in there and vote against it anyway, then turn it back the other way, to be honest with you. Right? That's the way I look at it.
It's all part of the whole project.
You
did enough to tip the balancing point.
Okay.
You're prepared to have a second version ready to go, Jerry, with that paragraph.
Okay, so
maybe you're
so
the
we'll
one
do
unvoted.
Something with that noise sentence there.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last thing you said, Jerry.
I said we'll do something with that sentence.
Okay.
Something that makes Randy happy, Jerry.
Yeah. And I'll run something by you, Randy.
Okay.
And so that brings us to the shadow flicker. And
on that issue, I asked at the hearing if the company, how the company notified the people within the shadow flicker.
Oh.
Oops, hold on a second here. How did the owners of occupied residences find out about the shadow flicker study? And the company said they can seek out information, but they didn't provide the results to occupied structures. And then they said, I think it would be a good idea if they did. I thought they promised to do that. Is that something that we just would mention here or not?
I'm trying to remember what we had with that discussion. I'd forgotten about it.
Well, I said, how do landowners learn about flicker and noise study results? And they said they can seek out information from the company, but the company does not provide the results to the occupied structures.
Did they promise to do something?
We'd have to go back and listen to that one, because I said I think it would be good practice for you to share those results with the residences, so the occupied residences, so they know. And he said, understood, or something to that effect.
Yeah, so I don't think we had a resolution.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of some language or something that some way you'd want to adjust this?
This location is owned by a participant in the restriction not occupied. So the way we have it now, does it say that one of the structures exceeds the recommended level?
The 36, there is no real hard level.
Right.
But the general idea was 30 hours, and we got one receptor in excess of that. And that's a participating owner, and the structure's not used all the time is how it came out. And, you know, if you remember the project map, there was not very many residences mm-hmm. in this area.
Right.
And they were all participating pretty much, except there was one small area that the guy didn't. But, so I don't think it was as much of an issue in this case as it had been in some other ones.
Refresh my memory. The worst case scenario was the 36 and a half hours,
yeah.
But the next worst case was not up there, right?
I think not. I don't have it right in front of me.
As I recall, there's nothing else, like just tottering on the line or mm-hmm. exceeding the recommendation.
Well, and maybe the fact that we say this is owned by a participating landowner, they're participating, so they must have reviewed this and, I mean,
usually
are aware of it.
But
okay,
I think that went to your question as to why it had that landowner who was going to be receiving that 36 hours a year, had they been aware of this, and I think that was where that discussion
right.
took place.
And the company said they didn't know for sure.
Right.
Well, I don't know that it needs to be in the order, but we should follow up with that and find out what they actually did as a follow-up to that discussion.
Maybe Brian will just do that for me. The setback languages, I just changed it a little bit. It just, to me, it didn't sound as well to say that they had more restrictive. I guess that is what they have, but and they're following more. But really, I thought they're complying with all the setback requirements. And so that was what I tried to say.
You know, I was thinking about that when I looked through it, Jerry. I agree with what you're saying, but I know the orders tend to get a life of their own after we issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never once said 1,400 was our... It isn't a rule.
I didn't put it in here.
Understand that, but the whole Gwynn community thinks our guideline is 1,400 feet. And so I would, if we could somehow nuance that this is more restrictive than the normal commission guideline, I think that might be appropriate, just so someone sees this, doesn't say, well, now they've changed it to 2,000 feet is their normal setback.
Well, I've been telling people that the commission had been using the 1,400 feet as a rough guideline, as a minimal, I said, but really it's probably on the short side.
Okay.
And
the turbines are getting bigger now and everything.
Yeah, and so. I go into that.
Okay.
And so I really am hesitant to say 1,400 feet anywhere in our orders.
Okay. Fair enough, Jerry.
Especially if the guy's not a participating landowner.
Okay. So you didn't agree with our previous decisions, right, Jerry?
Well, no, we went further than 1,400 feet.
I know.
That was an absolute minimum, and the guy had to be wanting it there.
Yeah.
Our road setbacks were more restrictive than theirs, and so they had to follow them, but the other setbacks for residences and stuff like that. Stark County had the 2,000 feet. Morton County had 1,320 feet, but even so, the closest one in Morton County was 15-something, and that was to an alternate location. So they weren't right on the line for those setbacks.
Is our road guideline, is that a rule, or is that just kind of a tradition like the 1,400 feet?
I believe that the road was, if you've got the criteria there, I think that was an exclusion area.
Okay.
Yep, that's correct.
So that's a cannot.
Okay. We put that in after some of the challenges we had the early wind farms. Okay, so it's, nothing's jumping out at me really after that.
I have one more on number 47 if we're at that point.
Okay.
If we're done with setbacks.
I think so.
I don't necessarily object to the language. I'm just maybe looking to Ryan even for advice. I don't want to leave an implication here that in my mind, their restoration fund that they talked about in the hearing, I don't fully know all about it. I don't know exactly where we're going to end up with our decommissioning rules by the time we're done. I don't want to leave them the impression that because they did that, that they have solved the problem.
Right. And that's my fault, Randy. I told you I'd fix the best paragraph, and I didn't. So let me put a star on that, and I'll come back with some language that just says that their decommissioning will be reviewed in accordance with the rules on the 10-year rule.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that noise?
It's construction.
It's working outside.
Oh, outside. Okay.
And then I have just two quick questions to clarify outside of the order. Jerry, you told me this answer, but I've forgotten what it is. That residence number 4 on that map, was that in or out? And then there were 3/4 of land in another area, and one map we had was an error from the other map, but I don't remember also if those 3/4 are in or out of the project.
The residence number 4... on the line, I'm going to have to check on that. The other ones, we got them corrected, and the one that you asked about was this ops and he's got land right south of the project area, and then he's also got a little acreage inside the project area up in section 31, and we changed him to being a participant landowner outside the boundary for that parcel.
Which one is that, Jerry?
If you look at the very center of the map, are you looking at the map?
Mm-hmm. What number?
Right here in section 8.
I think that's, there's a residence there?
It's a land that he owns. The residence 4 is over here on this line. And I'll have to go back and ask on that one.
Well, no, it says on one of our late filed exhibits that's a participating landowner.
And we had that corrected.
What is
along with that boundary problem too? Over here.
Well, at any rate, like late filed exhibit 3 and late filed exhibit 4 just don't really quite match. And so the outside boundary lines, I mean.
The correct outside boundary line is this one. Which is the corrected.
What number is that?
Exhibit 4. 4 is it?
Yep.
So the corrected 4 is what we noticed. And it's what they're asking for a project area.
I don't think I even have that. But
that's it right there, isn't it?
No, because this looks different in Jerry's. It doesn't have this coloring down here.
You know, this got sent in, and there was a discussion back and forth between John and Casey about if they had sent hard copies in them or not, and turned out that they hadn't, and so all that was sent was an electronic, and I think it didn't get docketed until the hard copies come.
Okay, and then I'm looking at my late filed 4 and looking at the one Jerry's holding up, and the east half of section 35 and the southwest quarter of section 34 on mine are out and on yours are in, and that was those other three quarters I was talking about. But so those are in. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we need to make sure that our ultimate record is clarified and that we have one map.
And this will be the corrected exhibit 4. And I don't know if our paperwork, like I say, has caught up with it yet or not.
Okay.
But
okay. Did you have any others?
That was it.
Okay, Julie, do you have anything else to?
I don't have any other questions.
How about I'll propose this then? We still have the discussion. We were talking about the power purchase agreement. If I agree with your viewpoint on the one, if we can hold the power agreement out and then we draft that up that way. Let me look at it again. Or do you want to look at that again? Do you want to go back to that again? I think that's kind of it. We could have Jerry make the tweaks and put out one more draft again. And then if we want to have a work session, we can. But we can look through it and have a chance to digest it all.
Well, how about this? Let's put it together with the tweaks that we've agreed on.
Okay.
And then if somebody feels they need a work session, they can ask for one.
Fair enough. Julie, is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so do I have a direction on the power purchase agreement?
Well, I think this...
In or out?
How about this? Put it in for now.
Okay.
And then I will be reluctant to move it forward for a vote on it, but I'll let Randy look at it one more time. I don't want to do that, unless you are okay with leaving it out right now. I want to cut you off without it. It might be the topic of another work session, but...
Let's just draft it up, as you said, and see where we're at.
I'll leave it in.
Leave it in for now, and then we'll go from there. If that's okay, Jules. Okay. So as soon as you get a draft back out, we could, and then if we need a work session before the next meeting, we will do it. Otherwise, maybe we can even get a vote by the next meeting. Okay. Anything else for this work session, Julie or Randy?
Nope.
Do we need to take a quick break before the next one? Or are we ready?
I do.
All right, we'll go ahead and close this work session on case number PU 14-105, and we'll be back in 5 minutes for our next work session. Thank you.
Let's say 20.